morning. Good morning, this is Glenn. On the air. And I am trying to work, get my music down here, so hang on. And I have a guest today, as you all know. My guest, how about that? I just turned the music off. My guest, as everybody knows, the final Thursday of the month is James Anderson, the Marion County naturalist. And he's celebrating his sixth anniversary will be in about a week, right?
Yes, with working for the Park District.
Yeah. That's cool. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It's been such an honor serving the community for the last 6 years.
Very politically spoken.
I try. But no, it has been fun. I've learned a lot. I've met a lot of people throughout the years, and I've enjoyed each experience. Even the good and the bad.
You haven't had any bad, have you?
Oh, I mean, there's always been some bumps on the road. Okay. I mean, with some things, but other than that, it's just been quite a life experience working with the Marion County Park District.
Well, it's fun to watch a young man as you are moving upward. And
thank you.
I hope your next stop is Yellowstone Park.
That'd be a dream, right? That's a very competitive job.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Park ranger at the big old Yellowstone National Park.
What is your ambition?
I'm very comfortable where I am, but I mean, yeah, I mean, being a naturalist or a park ranger, you know, you're big, like Smoky Mountains and all that would always, you know, that would be a really cool dream to be in.
So being a ranger is kind of a next step, right?
I guess you could, at some place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I am card to be, what am I called? Anyway, I can go into any national park for nothing because as a senior I bought a card for $10 and it lasts forever. I will put in a good word for you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
it. You really pay attention to me, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you have tantalized me this week by saying you're going to have a special guest with you.
Yes, yes.
And I've already told you, I love critters. I don't want to pick them up. And he's got a live one. Tell us about your critter.
So today I brought in a special guest.
He's beautiful.
Yes, I brought in a spotted salamander. So a very common species here in the state of Ohio. So I told Glenn when I'm picking them up, I have to wet my hands.
Yeah, it's kind of odd. You've got pond water. That terrible looking water.
Yeah, it's natural water, because the problem, if I got it out of the faucet, especially like in like Marion or LaRue or any type of city.
Chlorine in it.
The chlorine can kill them. But the oils on our hands can actually dry them out.
Oh.
And so that's why you have to keep your hands wet and moist when you're handling with salamanders and frogs too.
This one's black and he looks a little bit like obsidian.
And he's got the yellow spots.
He's a beautiful animal, and you've got him. What is that you have him sheltered in? Not the plastic.
It's just moss.
Moss.
Yeah, because moss, if you get it wet, it keeps it moist. It keeps it wet. It's the typical environment where you would find the spotted salamander in. Sometimes you'll find them under logs or rocks, but anywhere you'll obtain moisture. You won't find them in very dry places.
Is he, they don't have teeth, do they?
No, they don't. They don't have teeth like your eye, but they do have like these little ridges around their mouth, so they're able to grasp onto their food.
James has him in his hands right now, and he's trying to keep one step ahead of him.
Yes.
Are you afraid that he might jump?
They can't jump.
Oh, okay.
Not like their distant cousins, the frog and toad.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about. If he jumped, we might not find him in here. He's so dark.
Yeah.
And now, what do they live on?
So they primarily eat insects, small spiders, worms, things like that. So when you flip under a log, you see all those little critters underneath.
Yeah.
That's what they would typically eat. A lot of invertebrates.
How do they flip the rock?
Well, you got to flip the rock.
I got you.
But they just tuck themselves right underneath the log.
Oh, okay. Now, he's kind of slimy looking.
Well, that's important, because that moist skin That's actually how they absorb water and also oxygen. So they breathe. Well, this particular species and a lot of the mole salamander species, yes, they can breathe normally, kind of like you and I. But then there are some salamander species that are lungless and actually do not have any lungs, and that's how they breathe, is through their skin.
They absorb the oxygen through their skin.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I'll be darned.
And then what's also interesting too with this species, if he feels threatened, he could actually.
I think he looks like he feels threatened right now.
He could secrete a type of slimy mucus, and if I was trying to eat him, it would be a bad taste and could be poisonous.
I would imagine it would be a bad taste even if he didn't secrete that.
Probably. But I don't think it tastes like chicken.
He actually is kind of cute.
Yeah, they are. They are kind of cute.
Yeah, he's not. It's still not something I want to carry around with me, but he has. Little beady eyes.
Yeah.
Right now he was being very nice and just sitting there looking at me. So maybe he likes me.
Yeah, he might.
Yeah. There he goes. He's going to squirm out.
Oh, yeah. So what's really interesting about this particular species is they are the only animal on planet Earth that have a symbiotic relationship with a plant. And if you're not familiar with symbiotic relationship, it just basically means they have a very tight-knit relationship with one another. So it's with algae.
Do they have love songs to each other?
Kind of. So during the egg stage, or when they're in the larva stage, so when the baby salamander, before they're hatched, not all the time, but sometimes you may notice they're very green-looking, the eggs. Well, actually what it is, it is algae. Now, for the longest time, we thought that the algae grew on outside of the salamander's egg case. But actually, with science development and all, we found out that the algae actually grows inside the egg case and infuses with the cell. And the theory is, we're still not 100% sure why or how they do it, but the theory is, as the algae is producing oxygen for the baby salamander, and as the baby salamander is excreting waste, it's producing nitrogen, and that's what the algae is feeding off.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
So the only problem, what some scientists are finding out, is that algae is actually very stressed during that time, because you're putting him in this really thick jelly case, and it's basically blocking out the sunlight, which algae is a plant, wants to photosynthesize, yeah. You know, just like other plants, it needs the sunlight to do that. And so we're not really 100% sure what kind of relationship we would like to call it. For as of right now, we're calling it a mutualistic relationship. So that means two organisms that benefit from one another. So there's commensalism, which one organism gets benefit, and the other one's like, ah, okay, it doesn't really affect me, good or bad. And then there's paratism, which one benefits, and then one obviously gets harmed. So okay. When a flea or tick is biting into a person, a cat, a dog, something like that.
Yeah.
So those are the three relationships.
Sounds like you paid attention in that class.
Well, oh, and in science.
You know those words.
Yeah, yeah. Don't you remember that in science?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I know, that's a while ago.
What, hey, come on now. What does it feel like as he's walking across, going from hand to hand?
Yeah, it feels like little fingertips, just kind of crawling through your hand. It's like tarantulas. They're very soft.
Is it strong feeling?
When he's grasping on, yeah, he kind of pinches a little. I mean, it doesn't hurt, but you can you know, feel him
he's
trying
holding,
to grasp.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's kind of cool.
Yeah, he is kind of cool. He's got four legs. He's not like an arachnid or, you know, he's a normal four-legged animal.
Yeah.
And now, can they run, or are they pretty slow?
What you're just seeing, that's probably as fast.
He's clipping it off there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's his speed.
One hand to the next hand, 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Okay. He is a handsome critter.
Oh, he is.
And I'm glad you brought him in. Now, if you... Where did you find him?
I found him near my house in Eastern Morrow County. I was very tickled because I live out in Amish country area, and so that's primarily aquaculture. So, I mean, I assume there's a fernal pool because that's where they breed.
What does fernal mean?
So fernal means temporary.
Okay.
They are just wetlands that are designed to be full in the spring and dry in the summer.
Gotcha.
And so what happens during the breeding season, which is in about March and April, the female will release a gland on top of her back, and basically it will say, hey, I'm ready to produce eggs, and these males, they'll arrive to the pool first, and sometimes you can get hundreds and hundreds of these spotted salamanders
really
taking advantage of those fernal pools. And so what he'll do is he'll deposit his sperm packets called spermatophores, and then the females will obviously check which one is best, and then she will inseminate herself, and then a day or two later she'll be fertilized and she'll produce the eggs.
So these pools are like the Riviera for humans.
Yeah, I guess you could
call it a place to go mate.
Yes. And the fertile pools, they're great, but the problem is because they're temporary, they don't produce much oxygen. So having that special feature, as we talked earlier with that algae, gives them a step ahead versus other salamander species don't have that advantage. So it's basically first come, first serve. And then, of course, you got insects who are taking that oxygen. You got frogs and toads who are taking that oxygen. So, I mean, everybody's competing.
Now, are they related to frogs and toads?
Yes, they are a distant cousin, so they are an amphibian.
Okay.
And I told Adam Lepp I would help him tell him the difference between a salamander, a newt, and a lizard.
Okay.
Oh, and a skink.
Give us that.
What's all right. So salamanders are amphibians, and you're wondering what's the difference between reptiles and amphibians. Reptiles are covered in scales.
Okay.
Versus amphibians are not. Reptiles have claws. Amphibians do not. Big thing is about their life cycle. So for a lot of our salamander species and frogs and toads, their beginning stages, larva stages, you know, they're in some type of water, a pond, a fernal pool, whatever the case may be, and then they metamorphosize into adults. And then sometimes they'll stay in or around the pond. Sometimes they may escape. So that's kind of like the newt. Newt and salamanders, they are kind of similar, but they are a little bit different. We only have one species of newt in the state of Ohio. It's called the red-spotted newt.
Oh, and, I thought you were going to say Gingrich is the
okay.
Newt Gingrich.
So the red-spotted newt, during its young life, it will actually live on land for about 3 to 5 years, and it's really bright orange. It's called the F stage.
But then it doesn't have scales either.
No, it's an amphibian.
Okay. Yeah.
And then once it's an adult, it goes back into the water and lives there for the rest of its life. But then for salamanders, once they metamorphosize to adults, like the spotted salamander, they'll go out into land. And
they don't live in the water then?
No. There are some salamander species that do, that you can find in creeks and streams, but like the mole salamander group, or called the Omocysteae family,
How do you remember those words?
I don't know. I surprise myself sometimes too. They will hide underneath rocks, logs, leaf litter, things like that.
How do they protect themselves? You already said they don't have teeth, they don't have scales, they don't have any way to protect themselves.
So some species, like we talked about, the spotted salamanders, secrete mucus. Yeah, but some salamander species don't, so they really don't have...
Bottom of the food chain.
Yeah. So they do provide food for a lot of different types of animals, raccoons, opossums, herons, snakes, things like that. Frogs.
Wow. Now I'm starting to feel sad. Poor guy. Now, are you going to put him back in nature?
Yes, I'm going to put him back in nature. I have a certain park I'm going to put him in, because I'm afraid putting him back by my house. Again, it's an Amish country, and I'm afraid the cows or horses would step on him.
Yeah. I doubt that he can lift a cow.
No.
He's not. What is he? Maybe 4 inches long?
Yeah,
something like that.
He's the second largest land salamander in the state of Ohio. Oh. The largest is a tiger salamander, which get about a foot long.
Okay, do they have tiger-looking stripes
or
something?
Yeah.
Is that what?
They're in our adjacent counties in Crawford and Delaware County. Unfortunately, there's no records in Marion County. So we're not a very salamander-friendly county.
Well, why would that be?
Well, a couple reasons. Well, there's 24 species of salamanders documented in the state of Ohio. I think we only have about 4 or 5. One of the big reasons is, obviously, we're very developed for agriculture or development, you know, your villages, cities, things like that. But then your natural areas, like Big Island Wildlife Area, yes, it's natural, but the problem is it's very big, it's very open. Mm-hmm. And see, salamanders need kind of a closed, open forest. And what I mean by that, so they need some trees, but they can't have too many trees. So like Hocking Hills, you know, how it's really thick down there. So it can't be too cold or it can't be too warm. And so it's kind of right there in the middle. And that's the problem in the state of Ohio. We don't have that really early forest habitat, which a lot of our salamander species, like this guy, really depends on.
Well, Probably that's why I never see salamanders when I'm gardening, because my gardens are pretty well open.
Sometimes if you're near a creek or stream or,
yeah, and I'm not,
so. Or a wetland, sometimes I've heard of people finding salamanders by their houses. So it just depends on your environment. But yeah, since you live in downtown, your chances of finding a salamander is very slim.
Yeah, I don't even find frogs very often. But
okay, do you find toads?
About the same amount as the frogs.
Oh, okay.
And I don't pick them up and look at them real closely, so I may be wrong. I may be not seeing any of one and all of the other. I don't know. Yeah. But, so how did you know that was a boy?
So, when I...
Without getting too obvious.
Yeah, so, when I flipped them over, they are pretty packing, versus the females are not.
Oh, okay. All right.
I guess that's the PG-13 version. I could explain it.
Okay. So you can see it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I meant. All right. Well, he is a handsome... Have you named him?
My son said I should name him Sally.
Sally.
Sally's a salamander.
Even though it's a guy. All right.
He names all kinds of fun things.
Yeah. Now, saying that, would that make him sad when you send him, take him back to the... To the forest, would it make? Does he get attached to these guys?
Sometimes.
Really?
Sometimes. Oh. But I told him that, you know, he needs to go back out into the wild.
Sure. Yeah.
So I said I had to put him on, or I had to give him his fame on the radio stations this week.
Yeah. Yeah. He's Sally the Salamander is now a class. Booking. Right? He is handsome. Did you say they were yellow markings? I thought they were white.
Yeah, they're yellow.
Yellow. Okay.
During the young stages, they are more of a white appearance, but as they mature, they turn into that dark, kind of mustard yellow.
I wish you could. I wish we were on TV. We are not on TV, but he is really quite handsome and quite fun to look at. He's kind of calm now, too.
Yeah, it's kind of like snakes. They, you know, they're all feisty at first, but once they figure out you're not going to eat them or be a threat, they calm down.
Yeah, and he does like that shower you just gave him.
Gotta keep him hydrated.
Yeah, yeah. What a handsome dude. Okay, is he now? Would he be related way up the chain with like the Komodo lizards or anything?
Well, those are reptiles. So I guess a very, very distant cousin.
Yeah.
But again, he's more closely related to frogs and toads.
The reason why I said that is because in looking at his face, if that's what I'm looking at, he looks his body shape and his face look a little bit like a Komodo lizard.
I guess you could
except
say
for
that.
He's tiny.
Yeah, a tiny version.
Yeah, there you go. And I don't think Komodo lizards, they have kind of rough. Well, they're reptiles,
yeah,
so they're
the largest venomous animal on planet Earth.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! Now, is it like venom that come out of their teeth, or is it from their saliva? Or?
It's from their saliva.
That's
they
what
hold
I thought.
A certain bacteria.
Kind of like the Gila monster.
Yeah.
Now, I think the Gila monster only the female is poisonous, or it's one or the other. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I can't remember. But yeah, only one of the genders.
Yeah, and that happens a lot in nature, doesn't it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Strange Mother Nature.
Yeah.
But I'm sure she knows better than we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really glad you brought him in.
Yeah.
Hey, Sally, have a good day when you go out back out to the forest. Now, do you put her into a pond? Put him into a pond?
A fernal pool. I'll put him right by there.
Okay.
I figure he'll feel more at home at a fernal pool.
And there are probably plenty of them out there today since it's raining.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That's cool. I really like that. Thank you for bringing him in.
Oh, yes. Anytime.
What can we do? Is it important to save these critters?
Oh, absolutely. As we mentioned earlier, their ecological niche has helped to control a lot of the, you know, small bugs and other critters. And, you know, if you take things like salamanders and frogs and toads, you know, there's no one to control those little insects. And the next thing you know, we could be overrun. So the biggest thing, if you have a foresty area with fernal pools, please don't drain them out. Now, obviously, if there's some health issue or what, obviously, you know, follow those morals and all. But if you can, you know, leave the fernal pools alone. I know a lot of us like to drive four-wheelers and all. The problem with that is those ruts. And then the salamanders, during their breeding season, they see those ruts. Well, they think they're fernal pools. They go in there. Well, those ruts dry up so quick, and then their eggs don't make it.
Well, now, one of the reasons why people like to drain those pools is because they are a good habitat for mosquitoes.
And yes.
And so does the salamander eat the mosquitoes?
Yes, during their larvae stage or their tadpole stage, yeah, they will.
Oh, they have a tadpole stage.
Yeah, well, since they are related to the frogs and toads, yep, they have that tadpole stage. And how you can tell, salamanders have gills. So it looks like these little spikes coming out of their sides, but those are the gills, versus frogs and toads don't have.
So they look like a frog or a toad's tadpole.
Yeah, but you got to look for the gills.
I'll be darned. I used to... Now, see, that was a critter I didn't mind picking up. We would go to a place, Pottawatomie Park in South Bend, Indiana, and we'd go there, and we'd get tadpoles because we like to let them go into an aquatic thing.
Yeah.
And watch them grow into frogs. Once they got to be frogs, I had to ask the little girl next to me to pick it up and put it outside because I didn't want to touch the thing. Oh, now, both toads and frogs have tadpole development?
Yes, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
These guys will metamorphosize into adults about July, about mid to late July.
Is he as big as he's going to get?
Yeah, they won't get much bigger.
Okay, does he make any noises?
No, they do not make any noises.
I just found an app. Oh, and I thought of you all day.
Oh, boy.
My app has calls for birds.
Okay, is it Audubon?
No, it isn't.
Okay.
It's a free one.
Okay.
But it has calls for birds, but it also has calls for frogs.
Oh, awesome.
And
you have to let me know.
Yeah, and there's one other that it has
insects.
A human call.
Oh, human call.
Yeah,
oh,
which
boy.
Is really just a joke. But it's quite interesting. It only has three frogs.
Okay.
And I'm not sure whether they're frogs or toads. But I've heard them all. And well, because I selected Ohio's where I live, so it gave me those. But I'm interested in calls now.
Yeah.
Oh,
you'd be a good birder.
Oh, well, now, let me tell you what I did. I was a mean guy. I had finished mowing the grass. I had finished doing my walk. I was exhausted. I was thinking about having a beer, but I didn't because my wife would prefer that I just relax rather than drink a beer. So I was sitting out back, relaxing, and I saw a cardinal fly by.
Yeah.
Now, we have I'm sure we have a pair of cardinals that live in our yard.
Okay.
So I pulled out this app, and I started pushing the button for cardinal calls.
Oh.
And he got kind of mad at me.
Oh, yeah, they're very territorial.
Holy mackerel, he started dive bombing me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we turned it off.
That's good.
Yeah. But I also put on a blue jay call, and we do have blue jays in our neighborhood, and they started responding. So it was kind of fun.
That's what I do in my night hikes with the owls. I use owl calls.
Oh, and it has owls.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah. It has the one that we were talking about the last time we were together, I think.
No. The screech owl?
Yes. The pointy ears.
Oh, the great horn?
Great horn owl, yeah.
The great horn.
And I didn't get any responses from any of the owls.
But, oh, okay. Well, try screech owl. You'd be very surprised.
Okay.
They can live in downtown environments.
Really? And it did have screech owl on it, but I didn't play that one, so...
Okay.
I just couldn't believe I was fooling a cardinal.
Well, he thought you were a bird and weren't a person.
Yeah, I'm a big bird.
Yeah.
But he stared at me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he probably heard it and then obviously observing you and said, well, that doesn't look like a cardinal.
He must be sitting on a cardinal.
Yeah.
But his girlfriend, or wife, she... was a little afraid of me. She flitted away and let the boy attack me.
Yeah.
She didn't attack me. But he didn't really hit me or anything. But he did fly pretty close, basically saying, would you stop that? I guess.
But, yeah, they'll attack their own reflection.
Yes.
Windows and cars.
Yeah, and he does. He and his girlfriend, they do. We have a picture window. And they will come to the picture window and kind of flutter against it.
Yeah.
They've learned not to, that there's something there.
So yeah.
They don't hit it like they used to. A couple of years ago, we had them diving into them.
But unfortunately, a lot of times they'll hit a window so hard they'll break their necks.
Yeah, well, I think they figured that out because now they just flitter around them.
Okay.
I guess they're trained to scare them.
Do you have any decals or anything?
I'm not going to put decals on my big picture window in the front.
Well, I recommend to people that if you're having trouble with cardinals and other species, put decals.
Okay. Well, now we do pull the curtain, and that seems
that would help
slow them down. They must see the reflection of the curtain and say, well, I can't go in there. So.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question I got to ask you.
Uh-oh.
It has broken my heart. We had a robin, and we have a light out right by our back door.
Okay.
Bad place for a robin to start a nest.
Yes.
And she started a nest on top of the light. Will she ever come back? She hasn't. We don't see her there.
Okay.
But have we scared her away? Or
if they feel stressed, they will, yes, abandon their nest. And they'll make a new one, and
okay.
they will just...
So,
start a new family.
I don't have to worry about, well, there are no eggs in it. I have looked.
Yes, and that is something you need to consider, because if once they have eggs, you cannot legally touch them.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918.
Well, I didn't sign.
Yeah, it's a federal offense. So.
For any bird or just robins?
Well, any native bird of the United States.
Okay, well.
So the ones that get excluded are house sparrows and starlings, since they are not native to the United States.
They aren't?
No, they are invasive. They are originally
tons of them.
Yes. They originally from Europe, and we brought them over for a couple reasons. If you've ever read William Shakespeare, Edward Allan Poe, ever mm-hmm. read their literature.
Quoth the Raven.
And they mention about the sparrow and the starling. Well, during the theater production, especially on the East Coast around New York, after they were done, well, guess what they did with the birds?
I don't.
They let them go.
Oh.
And so they expanded. What was it? By 1879, house sparrows made it to Ohio, and 1916, starlings made it to Ohio.
Cool. We have a caller. Let's go to the phone here. Hang on. I got to make sure I do the right thing here. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Hi, Glenn. I actually thought of a good question to ask.
Sure.
Either the human one or the non-human. I'm not sure if the non-human talks.
Not very loudly. Go ahead, Dan.
How you doing there, James?
Oh,
staying dry?
Yeah, I'm trying to. Did you listen to the information about the salamander and newt and all?
Yeah, I had a tech support call, but I've heard 90% of it. But here's my question. This is a good question. You've seen the property where the station now hangs its hat.
Yeah.
The backyard really goes back far, really more than I knew until I investigated. Will we expect to see any of the wildlife, any reptiles or amphibians somewhere outside, maybe by that wood in the back, or
you could probably see.
Are we too urban where we are to see anything? Anything of interest if we were to go out? I've never really seen any animals out in the back. You know, Columbus, they have deer even in very developed areas because of all the urban sprawl. But what kind of non-human animals might we see if we were to do a little poke around outside?
Oh, you could see all kinds of things. You could see garter snakes. You could see coyotes, raccoons, opossums, deer, as you mentioned down in Columbus. So
even
what now?
We're not too urban to have coyotes. I know that's a problem somewhere, but you know we're just off downtown.
No, they actually can thrive in downtown environments. Actually, a couple years ago, I found one on Silver Street there by Fred's Ice Cream.
Oh my!
I think he was looking for somebody's leftovers, but what makes coyotes pretty successful because they can live in so many different types of environments.
Right. I think I may have seen a squirrel. I don't. That's all I've really seen.
Red foxes.
I guess you have to look. I mean, they do camouflage a bit, but it's just always fascinating what you would see. You might think you're in the middle of a city.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes fascinating what it is that you would see.
You should put a trail camera, and especially for the nocturnal creatures, you'll be very interested in what kind of wildlife you could get.
Yeah, I think we might have seen a bat. Those definitely are around.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have bats at our house, and we're
so this kind of weather, because we've had a much needed rain. That obviously brings out frogs and other animals that thrive in this weather. So.
Yeah. Toads would probably be the one you would see more, since I really didn't see any type of wetland or pond area. You probably wouldn't get any frog species, but toads, they can survive of not really being
around. Yeah, I mean, it's just more all the grass. And I know with the wood, I know snakes seem to like that.
Yes, they do.
In Marion, we basically just have the harmless snakes, like the garter snakes, the copperheads. They're in Ohio, but more southeastern.
Yes, for copperheads and timber rattlesnakes. But up in Wyandotte County, in Kildare Plains Wildlife Area, that's where the eastern Masaga or pygmy rattlesnake is located.
Okay.
So not far from Marion.
So pygmy meaning small. So they aren't as bad as the ones that you hear about on TV that you need the antivenin immediately.
It just depends on the person, but they can be dangerous, you know, towards humans.
How big do they get?
In the city of Marion, then.
Oh, no. No,
we certainly have garter snake, and they're harmless.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
And they're beneficial because they eat some critters, too, that we don't like.
Yes, yeah, they'll eat small little insects, small toads, things like that.
Huh.
So even downtown, you might find one. Because we are, it's pretty close to downtown, and there's residences a block or two from where there's a lot of businesses.
Yeah.
So as long as there's dirt and potentially wet grass, we might find some of these individuals, I guess, non-human individuals.
Yes, yes. No, you're absolutely right. Yep. You'd be very surprised at all the types of urban wildlife you can find in downtown Maine.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And with Marion, we don't have the developments that you have. I mean, like in Powell and around Delaware, where areas that were farmland or nothing 10, 20 years ago are now neighborhoods with houses and sometimes businesses.
Yeah.
Well, we also have nice canals for raccoons. They're called sewers.
Yeah.
And they live in there, I'm sure. We'll do
some investigating. But so basically, James, nothing we would see in this area would be harmful.
Toads
are in that category of he's more afraid of you than you are of him.
Yes, yeah, and same with coyotes. I mean, it's very, very rare of a coyote attacking a person, and again, they're more afraid of you than you are of them.
Yeah, and I guess foxes, too, we hear about that. I mean, they're cute. They look like a Pomeranian, and they sort of are because they're related to dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not harmful. And then they heard about possums. They can eat like 80 times their weight in food. They don't carry rabies, and they're harmless. They're actually very beneficial.
Yeah, they can eat up to about 5,000 ticks a year.
Oh my!
Yeah. Huh. Okay. You know, it's just kind of interested because what you see, even if you think you're in the middle of an urban area, you might be a little surprised.
Yeah.
I will keep a lookout, and maybe I'll find some friends there in the yard.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Thanks, Go ahead,
see you guys. Thanks,
Thank
James.
You,
Adam.
Bye-bye. Very interesting.
And then I forgot to mention, we discussed a moment ago, but like the screech owl.
Yeah.
You know, you can find them in downtown environments because they're only bigger than a pop can. So, I mean, all they need is a little hollowed out cavity or a hollowed out tree, and they can thrive there.
Now, we've put up, I've been very successful this year because of COVID. I have nothing better to do with my time, so I've put up lots of feeding places for birds.
Okay, that's
and
good.
And I've done a lot of gardening, which is it helps. We've gotten a lot of not butterflies, but white butterflies.
Yeah, they're cabbage white butterflies.
Oh, okay. We've gotten a lot of those and yellow ones.
Sulfurs. Yeah.
Okay, and we've. Tons of birds because of the putting the seeds out
and
stuff.
Yeah, and you primarily get house sparrows and starlings. Those are the ones that hit. And then cardinals and blue jays and finches.
Robins.
And robins, yeah.
Now, not too far from our house, a lady grows tons of sunflowers.
Oh,
and she has
the
tons. Blackbirds. No, she gets yellow finches.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of them.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that I will get a few of those my way. I haven't seen them
yet. Put some nitrous... thistle seed.
I have thistle seed
out. Do you have it in the sock tube?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Do they come to that?
Yeah.
Now, see, the odd thing about that is they're little tiny holes in the sock tube, and I keep thinking, well, how are they going to get the seeds out of there?
Well, they just use their beak, and they just kind of angle it, and they just yank it out.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, so I took half of the sock thistle seed and put it in my other three feeders,
okay,
and they're gone.
Oh, yeah.
The birds must like thistle seed.
Oh, yeah. your finch species are fond of the thistle seeds.
Little tiny seeds.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. And so you don't want to open the sock up and just turn it over because it'll all come out.
Yeah.
I've done that before. Yeah.
In my house.
Oh, lovely.
Oh,
lovely.
Yeah. My wife was not thrilled.
I hope you have a good vacuum cleaner. Anyway, well, I'm looking forward to this spring because it just seems, I don't know whether it's the COVID that's caused me to be more active in trying to get critters, or whether it's a good year for animals. Is it a good year for animals?
Yes, I would say so. Now, I know last week we had that late April snow shower, I guess right. You could call it. But overall, I've been very pleased. We haven't been fluctuating like we have in the past. Right. You know how it get really warm and then it get really cold and just do that balancing act all the time. We're primarily, you know, staying in warmer temperatures.
Okay, so that's been good. Well, we've got another caller. Let's go to the phone. Hang on just a second. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Call back. I might have accidentally cut you off. Hey. Phooey. I think I did. Okay. Well, call us back I see one of the problems I'm having here. My thing is marked the wrong. Your microphone is supposed to be pink. Believe that.
Oh, not,
that's pink.
Okay.
And so, can I hear you? Would you talk into it again?
Good morning, Barry.
Okay, that's what I was afraid of. I'm not getting.
Hello, it. Hello. There we go.
All right. It must be purple. Okay. Anyway,
that's a non-color purple.
Well, my caller, by the way, I lost you. Here you come. Okay, let's go back to the phones here. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you? We have a... What is that?
Oh, just a typical man-made frog call. So,
frog call.
Yeah, nothing in Ohio.
I have a name recognition on my phone, so I know who it is.
Oh, okay. I appreciate the call.
And we're going to send the police your way. Thank you for calling in, Mr. Frog.
It's not easy being green.
Yes. Or black with yellow spots up.
Yep.
How's he doing?
He's doing good. He's just hanging out.
So now are you going to take him and release him today?
My goal is as long as weather is not, you know, thunderstorming.
Oh, okay.
So as long as it's decent, I'll let him go, and if not, I'll let him go tomorrow.
Okay. Well, what was his name again?
Sally.
Sally, have a good day when he lets you go. I'm sure you will have a good time. Well, we're almost at the end of this hour. We got about four more minutes. And you have anything more about critters like that you want to say?
So, yeah. It's probably the big thing I always tell people. Rather, a salamander is a turtle or a wildflower, you know.
A
wildflower.
Oh, yeah, wildflower.
So,
yeah.
You know, when we're out in nature, you know, we see all these cool nature discoveries. And unfortunately, there are people who see these kinds of things and either want to take them home or pick them, you know, like the wildflowers and give them to their mom or grandma or whoever. The thing is that hurts our environment, and, you know, we've kind of been talking about all the...
Even if you just pick a wildflower?
Yeah, even just picking a wildflower, like a large flower trillium. If you...
Well, that's against the law, isn't it,
to pick trilliums? In some state parks and all, but in a lot of our area, no, there's no really protections if they're not endangered.
Okay. So we have another caller. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Yeah, if you send the police my way, I'll send the grizzly bear yours. Thank
you. Oh, boy.
All right. Have a great day. And I knew that's who it was because my caller identification told me. Anyway, we won't send any police your way. You're a good caller, and we like to have you calling in, even if you do speak toad, but not very well.
Yeah.
Because James understood that was a fake toad. All right.
But back to the trillium. Yeah. When you pick them, sometimes it takes 5 to 7 years.
That's what I read.
To rejuvenate.
To rejuvenate just the blossom, right?
The whole plant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It kills the plant
if you
snap off the bud, the flower?
Yeah. Now, not all wildflower species are like that, but trillium is an example of, you know, when you're picking. I mean, that's what you're doing to your environment.
We went up north. We used to have a place up in northern Michigan, and trillium grow crazy in the woods up in northern Michigan for some reason or other. And I went to dig up a trillium, thinking, you know, I would take it home. And my sister-in-law told me, don't do that. You're going to kill it. And it's against the law, so I didn't do it. But they're such a pretty plant. Especially, they have three white petals.
Yeah.
And if you're in a woods and the woods is full of them,
two of our parks are full of them right now. Well, really? Three, I should say. Part of Tallgrass Trail at the 5 mile marker, the 6 mile marker out between Schmidt and Augusta Northern Road. And then Myers Woods Nature Preserve, which is on Marion Wyandotte County Road, and then Paradise Nature Preserve outside of Caledonia. They're full of trillium.
Well, I thought maybe that they might artificially grow them, and then I could buy one. Wait. But I couldn't find it.
Oh, Natives in Harmony, I know, which I've mentioned to you many times.
She has it.
Yep, she sells trillium.
I'll be darned. I may have to run out there. I haven't gone there. I keep threatening. I haven't gone there yet.
Got it. And you can get a free tree out there.
Yeah, you told me that. Yes. I don't need any trees since
she's got trees, shrubs, even small trees, too. So, no, I mean, there's big trees, little trees. So,
I do have a beautiful redbud growing amongst my mulberry tree.
Oh, yeah. Is it still in blossom in the pink petals?
Yeah, I think it's going away now.
Yeah, they don't last forever. But
it's beautiful.
It's probably too late now, but next year when they're first coming out, if you eat a few of them, they taste like sweet spinach.
If you eat a few what?
The flowers.
You can eat the flowers?
Yeah, they taste like sweet. Eat them raw.
I'm not a big spinach eater, but...
but it's very sweet.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to give it a try.
And a cool survival tip, they do have some electrolytes in them, so if you're out in the wild and you don't have much water on you, you need some electrolytes to help your body function, yeah, it helps a little bit.
That's cool. I love hearing things like that. Well, we're going to get back here in about 15 minutes. We're talking with James Anderson, the Marion County naturalist, and we've got a critter with us, Sally, our salamander, and he's listening too. So we'll be back.
For people like the first female Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright.
If Donald Trump does get in, what kind of damage could he do? He's got to deal with Congress, the Senate, the Supreme Court. From somebody who's been there and dealing with foreign countries, if he's in there, what could there be a bad future?
I'm concerned about that. I have said that if he gets elected, it is a danger to the United States. The truth is, in many ways, just the kinds of things that he's saying during